my goodness, we've got guests. You know what that means. It's another masterclass episode on Studio Class.
Hi, divas. Are you ready to jump into another masterclass episode? Because I am. That's why we're here. I'm so excited. So I am thrilled to bring you this episode with Tonya Lawson. She is so wonderful, so smart. I think you're going to get a lot out of this episode. I hope you'll listen all the way through to the end and then find us on social media and tell us, you know, what was your takeaway from this episode? What was something that you're going to implement in your own life? But before we get there, let me give you the formal bio for Tonya and we will kick things off. So here we go. Dr. Tonya Lawson is a musician, blogger, and SEO specialist whose mission is to empower musicians and other creatives to build out passive income streams so they have the financial freedom to live the life that they want. Yes. Hello, divas. Are we not talking about the same things here? Yes. I love this. You can see why I wanted Tonya to come on to the podcast and talk about this. Tonya is a multi-passionate entrepreneur who currently runs a private studio of over 50 students, has three blogs, a coaching business, a blogging membership, multiple courses, teaches at Middle Tennessee State University, and so much more. When not working, Dr. Lawson enjoys gardening, running, reading, cuddling with her two cats. Their names are Dot and Biscuits. How sweet is that? And playing with her dog, Buster. So you can see why I just really wanted to chat with Tonya about all of these things, and I cannot wait for us to get into this episode. So let's do it. Here we go. Yay. Tonya, welcome. Thank you so much for being a masterclass guest on the Studio Class podcast. I am so thrilled that you're here, and I was hoping that you would just kick things off for us in this episode by telling us just a little bit about yourself.
Absolutely. First of all, I'm so happy to be here. I'm so excited to chat with you today. Just a little bit about myself. I have been teaching part-time since 1997, and I've been running a full-time music studio and other business since 2005. So I'm one of those people who graduated with my doctorate in clarinet in my first year out of grad school. There were 50 job openings. I applied for them all and I got two interviews. And yep. In both instances, they hired someone with more experience, which is completely understandable. Then I started building a studio. The next year, there were only 5 positions in the entire US.
Oh my gosh.
I got an interview for one and they went with someone with more experience. So I was like, you know, I need to get serious about this. I had to take a summer job working in a bagel shop for minimum wage to make rent. And that was a little mortifying for me. It was definitely a blow to the ego. And I decided this was never happening again. So I worked really hard to build out a private studio. And I teach in Tennessee, which is one of 2 states, to my knowledge, that allows you to go into the schools and teach music lessons. Oh, I believe great. Tennessee and Texas are the only 2, and those are the only 2 states I've ever taught in.
Yeah.
And they toyed with the idea of getting rid of that program here, and it terrified me. I had flashbacks to that bagel shop, and I was like, no, can't happen again. So I got really serious about diversifying my income streams, and now my income doesn't come just for private lessons. And I'll be honest, with a real life experience, my roommate of 19 years had emergency surgery 2 days ago, and I had to cancel my entire day of lessons for the last 2 days. Right. And I don't have to worry about it because I have other income streams bringing in money.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm so glad that you brought that up early, because obviously this is something that I love talking about. And I think that we don't always have a lot of information as we're building our careers about building out your offers and building out your income streams. So it's just so nice to have these conversations here about what's possible, right? So Tonya, I was wondering, one of the things that I like to do at the beginning of these episodes is ask about what's an intention that you're keeping for yourself right now. So this is before we jump into all the nuts and bolts stuff about our careers, but what is an intention that you're keeping for yourself right now?
Right now, I am prioritizing rest. Mm. Like most of us, I'm a consummate workaholic. Yeah. I try to work all the time. And I have really put a priority on rest over the last 6 months. And it has it's been mind blowing. Yeah. I am so much more productive. So I make sure I get up at 5:30 in the morning. So I make sure I am in bed at 9 o'clock every night.
Yes.
If I need a nap in the middle of the day, I take one. If my brain is too tired to work, I stop working because I know I'm not going to get everything done.
Tonya, can you give me an example of something where when you've started to prioritize rest more, it helped you get sharper on how to be more efficient or streamline some of the other things that you were doing in your day?
Yeah. So when I started focusing on rest, I found that when I was actually in work mode, I was 10 times more focused. Mm. I was able to see exactly what had to get done and what could wait instead of just this huge list of to-dos. Yes. And it really helped me sharpen my focus, and my business started doing better because of it.
That's awesome. I'm so glad to hear that. So you were talking about building out your studio, and I know that that's one of your income streams. That's one of your offers. But I have a lot of people that I work with that listen to this podcast that are thinking about expanding their own teaching studios, or kind of they're at the beginning of their studio teaching journey. Do you remember anything about that time period and about some of the things that you were doing to get to know your community better so that people would refer people to you, as well as just kind of putting your information in front of potential students? Do you have any thoughts about when you were first starting that, the things you were doing to expand?
Yes. Now you have to recall when I was very first, well, first of all, rewind. I have built a studio from scratch 3 different times in 3 different cities.
Yes.
So I'll compare like the very first to the very last. When I was first doing it, it was 1997 and we didn't text yet.
Yeah.
You can think about how the technology we have today. So it was just sheer networking, talking to people, meeting people, introducing myself. And that's not something I'm super comfortable with. Mm. Once I'm talking to somebody, I am totally fine. I can carry a conversation for days, but actually going up and introducing myself, you know, it's the clammy hands, nervous. Yeah. It's just like walking out onto stage to perform. You just have to do it.
Yeah.
And the more you do it, the easier it gets. Now, fast forward to 2005, when I started building my studio again, I once again prioritized networking. Mm-hmm. I contacted everyone I knew. Yeah. I contacted people I didn't knew. I contacted the other teachers in the area.
Uh-huh.
Said, "Hey, I just finished my doctorate. I just moved to town. I'm not trying to take your students." Yep. Make that very clear.
Yes.
But if you hear of any openings where there's availability and you can't handle it, would you consider sending them my way?
Yes.
So that's what I did first. So when I was first building up the studio, the most recent time, because technology was a little bit better then, I started with that. And I honestly started teaching not in the city I live in. I started teaching in smaller surrounding communities because they had more trouble getting teachers.
Yeah.
As I started teaching in those communities, I started building relationships with the band directors in those communities. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Band directors talk.
Yeah.
So when another school was losing a teacher and needed another one, they would be like, "Oh, I have this great teacher."
Yeah.
And now I'm at the point in my career where I'm not taking students. I got an email from a band director last week and I was just like, "I am so sorry. I can't right now. I am at max capacity."
Yep. It's a good place to be when your studio is full, but I'm sure, you know, you're wanting more rest too, and you're wanting to like create that space. Was that part of your transition as part of you growing your business where you thought about, oh, there's a limit to how many students I can teach in person? And that has made you think of different ways to offer your teaching and mentorship and guidance and things like that.
Absolutely. So I find that in the musical community, we don't like to talk about money. Nobody wants to talk about what they're making or how much they're charging. And I personally am here to just shatter that ceiling.
Yes.
I am totally transparent, willing to talk about it.
Yes.
So, but yes, you're right. At some point, there are only so many hours in the day and you can't run yourself into the ground. I know a teacher who teaches 80 lessons a week. I could not do that. I am currently at a little over 50 and that's way more than I want.
Yeah, I feel you.
So there's a capacity. Mm-hmm. So there's also that possibility of losing your income. Mm-hmm. In January, students stop taking lessons because parents reevaluate their budget. Mm-hmm. Every year this happens. In the summers, some students drop. Now, I've built a studio culture where the majority of mine don't, but there's always going to be some who drop over the summer. Mm-hmm. So your income has all these fluctuations. Mm-hmm. So it is so important. And I'm really preaching to those who are just first starting out right now. It's so important to start diversifying your income from day one. Mm-hmm. So in addition to teaching music lessons, which is a big part of what I do, I also run 3 blogs.
Nice.
And I do one-on-one coaching. I have a membership and I have courses.
I love it. Yeah.
And I didn't do all that at once, but I built it over time.
I think that's also a big part of this is I do kind of want you to talk about how you scaffolded that, how you built it kind of like over time, because I think that's one of the things that you and I probably both run into a lot is that it just feels like you have to do everything all at once. Like you're getting all of this information. You have to build your studio. You have to create like passive courses. You have to create like all of these things all at the same time. And that's just impossible for all the things that we want to do. Can you talk a little bit about how you went about building out your various income streams?
Oh, absolutely. So like I said, it started with just private lessons. Mm-hmm. And then I hit that moment of terror, you know, reliving that bagel shop nightmare. And I was like, you know, I have a website, but it doesn't do anything for me. There's gotta be a way I can monetize this website.
Yeah.
Everybody else does. So I took my very first SEO course.
Yeah.
And it was taught by some dude. And it was all about building niche websites. Mm-hmm. It's like the only way you can make money online is to build a niche website. So that's what I did. Mm-hmm. I built my coffee website.
Nice.
And I, all of a sudden, after about 6 months, it started getting some traffic and then it started bringing in a little money. Yeah. And I was like, hey, this is working.
Yeah.
There's gotta be a way I can figure out how to apply this to my music website.
Yes. Yeah.
So I started using those same tips and tricks, but also tweaking it just a little bit because I know how the creative mind thinks.
Yeah.
These guys out here who just build up a bunch of niche websites and sell them, they don't know how the creatives think. Yeah. So I started tweaking it and all of a sudden my music website was getting more traffic than my coffee website.
What? That's crazy. I love it.
So I started teaching this, how to and then COVID hit. Okay. Now I will say I'm one of the few teachers who didn't, I actually gained students during COVID because I was already familiar with technology. So it was an easy transition, but I had all this extra time because I never had to go anywhere. So what did I do? I built my third website, which is a gardening website because gardening is just one of my passions that I love to do anyway.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it never ends. I also developed my first course during 2020.
Wow.
That evolved into my working with a business coach for the first time, which changed my life.
I'm so glad.
And I developed my second course, which then evolved into my membership.
Wow.
And now I am I just hired an assistant because I've hit the point where I can't do everything.
Yeah.
And I am working on growing my YouTube channel.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Tanya, can you tell us a little bit about your hiring process, right? When you realize that you've got all of this, you've got your entire business and it's time for more help. What was that like?
Okay. So once again, I'm going to go back to networking.
Yes, you can always come back to networking on this podcast.
So I am in a mastermind group and I'm in a membership.
Yeah.
And out of those two communities, there are a lot of really brilliant women. Well, as part of this mastermind, I'm in a variety of Facebook groups. Mm-hmm. And one of the women in the Facebook group said, I think I'm going to take my virtual assistant business full time.
Ooh, yeah.
Well, I knew I had already hired out some of my social media work and my podcast pitches and that sort of thing. I had already hired all that out. And after finding this out, I was talking with my mentor, mm-hmm. who runs the agency that I hired yeah. Mustafa out to. And I was like, you know what? I'm thinking about looking into hiring this person. She's like, oh, that's who I'm training to take over your social media. So we had a conversation and now she is working for me.
That's so great. I love that. Well, and it makes so much sense. Like, I think that sometimes we think that it has to be, you know, farther away than it is. And when you start to look, you're like, oh, I actually do know these people, or I'm actually kind of already working with them. And what would it look like to re-envision this? Or are they taking their work full time in that way? I think that's so brilliant.
Well, and I will tell you this. I know that a big thing out there, people know they need an assistant and they're like, oh, I'm not ready yet. I can't afford it yet.
Yeah.
Every decision that I've made to outsource, yeah. I have not been ready.
Yeah.
And I've been a little nervous about it.
Yeah.
And every single time it has paid off in dividends. Sometimes you just have to make the move, even though because you're never going to feel ready.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, that's so, so true. So I know that is a topic that keeps coming up across my coaching life and on the podcast and things like that. So I really love when people can talk about it from their own personal experience and just say, this is what it was like for me. And with your experience, it helps us to kind of look, you don't have to create all these hoops to jump through. I think that's some of the advice that we sometimes get is like, oh, you have to create all of these like example assignment type things and then hire people who have done. And I'm like, no, that seems like a lot of work.
Absolutely.
So Tonya, one of the things that I'm always curious about is, what is a skill that you love to teach? And obviously, you know, we have from the whole clarinet side of your life, but also you teach so many things across all of your facets of your business. So this is up to you. If you, whatever kind of skill you want to talk about, what is a skill that you love to pass on to other people?
One of my favorites right now is blogging and SEO. Mm-hmm. And that's SEO means search engine optimization. And to really make it simple, it's basically what you do on your website so that it gets found in Google searches.
Yes. Yeah.
And I love teaching that. I just finished up a 5 days to ranking challenge with some people who are really taking their website seriously, because what's the point in having a website if nobody's finding it?
Yes.
And if you're buried down on page 10 of Google, you want to be ranking in one of those top five spots.
Yes.
And I love teaching people how to do that because it changes their life. All of a sudden they're getting more leads, they're getting more students, they're selling their courses, etc.
Well, can you, obviously this is a perfect time for your pitch, get like, where should people go if they want to take like the full SEO course with you? And then from there, can you give us a little juicy tidbit so that we can like kind of incorporate that into our lives, especially that, you know, I think everybody who's listening is like, oh, I have a website, but it's not really doing anything for me.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a membership called Creative SEO.
Yeah.
And because I think this is so important for everyone, I wanted to make it affordable to everyone. So it's only $33 a month. It's literally less than I spend on Starbucks.
Yeah.
So I want, now it's not going to stay that low, but it's that low for now. And you're grandfathered in at whatever rate you join, as long as you're in it.
That's amazing.
So that's where you can go to learn about it. And I have lots of trainings in there and I do a new training every single month. And I have a live Q&A call every month.
I love that. Wow.
So it's wonderful. And now some tips on SEO. Okay. So first of all, if you have a website, you should have a blog. If you don't have a blog on your website, it's never going to get found on Google, because mm-hmm. your blog is how it gets found on Google. I mean, IKEA and Home Depot even have blogs on their website.
Can you talk about why the blog is the reason why it, like, why Google then finds you a little bit and like ranks you a little bit higher?
Yes. So when you go to search Google, you're looking for an active solution to a problem or an answer to a question. Mm-hmm. So for me, one recently, all of a sudden the water pressure in my sink went away. Yeah. So I Googled how to fix low water pressure in a sink. And that took me up to a website that showed me how to do it. And I had my water pressure back in like 3 minutes, but that was a blog. I think we have a misunderstanding of what a blog is. A blog is no longer those Dear Diary posts, the Tumblr posts from back in the day, or those, my favorite, the What I Eat in a Day posts. Yeah. A blog now is, you can think of it more as a helpful article that provides helpful information to the reader. So when you are setting up your website and getting ready to start your blog, you need to ask yourself, what are questions people ask me? Mm-hmm. Or maybe you're writing an article on online voice lessons. Mm-hmm. Think to yourself, when someone is searching for online voice lessons, what are they searching for? Mm-hmm. You know, it might be online voice lessons near me. A big one is, are online voice lessons as good as in-person voice lessons?
Right.
That's a blog post right there.
Exactly.
So make sure that you are writing answers to questions people are probably searching Google for. Yeah. And make sure you include those questions directly in your article.
I think that's such a good point. I'm going to underscore what you said. Make sure that you put the question in the article, because that's one of the reasons why Google is going to be like, this is answering the thing that people are asking me.
Yeah, make sure you put it in the title too.
Exactly.
I could go through and give you a long laundry list of things you should put it in. But when I get into some of those big words, people like meta description, URLs, like people are like, what? No, panic. Don't worry. There's a whole sheet for that in my membership.
See? Exactly.
Shameless plug.
Yes. Not shameless here, because I think that's so important, is that somebody who understands artists and why we're making websites in the first place, but then you're giving them more information about, yeah, you want your website to work for you and be the thing that gets, you know, when people are looking for what you do, I want your website right there at the top. So I love that you're making that available. And also you speak the same language as artists. You know, you're able to like help them understand why we would do this for our website.
Oh, absolutely. And I get so many people. I was talking to someone once and she's like, when it comes to SEO, I feel like a kindergartner and I don't know any of those words.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, you just have to understand what the words mean, because the average person isn't going to know what pizzicato or pianoforte, any of that means. But as a musician, we're like, okay, so you want to start three bars after the presto section.
Exactly. And, you know, I think musicians are always great at beginner's mind, you know, because we are quintessential lifelong learners. So SEO is not beyond us. This is totally something that we can bring into our lives. So I love that that's something that you teach, and also that you make it available through the membership, because it makes so much sense. I'm wondering if you could talk about making it easy for people to engage with the offerings that you have. This is a little bit of a leading question, so I'm going to like tell you why, is that I think as artists, when we have these multifaceted portfolio careers, we're not always very clear about the different offerings that we have and how easy it can be to like sign up, get started, onboard, etc. And I find that that's a big stumbling block for a lot of artists, where they have an offering, they have an income stream, but it's not really doing anything for them because it's hard to find or people can't get started easily. And so you lay out your different options so beautifully. And I was wondering if you could just kind of talk about, did you have to overcome anything internally to put it out there? And also, were you thinking about ease of onboarding for people when you were coming up with these options?
Oh, that is such a great question. You're right. That is a loaded question.
Okay. So many things in there.
So first of all, did I have any problems with it in the beginning? Yes. And it is totally called imposter syndrome. We all have it. Yeah. Everybody has it. And when I was first putting my first course out there, and I'm like, oh no, will people want this? Will they think, what makes me qualified to do this? And And then I was like, you know, what makes me qualified to do this is that I've done it multiple times and I've been successful at it. Yeah. But still, those little thoughts that are, it's like, as musicians, we are beat down so hard in school. You know, it's like, it's never good enough. It's never, well, you know what? It's never going to be good enough, but who cares? And then like the figuring out the delivery system. So for my course, Passive Income Academy, it started, I actually ran it live.
Nice. Wow.
I wanted to make it as good as it could possibly be. And I ran it live. I limited it to 10 people. I was like, I'm taking 10 people to do this live training over the summer. It's going to be 8 weeks.
Yeah.
And I had 10 people in there. And quite literally, I would do the training and get their questions. And then after, I would sit down and just write everything down. And then the next training the same way. And then I realized there was a lot of stuff in my trainings that was just over the heads of these people. But to me, it's just like every day, kind of like, as a musician, you know musical terms, you know what they mean. If the conductor says start up at pickups to 43 and play to the end of the trio, you know exactly what that means. Mm-hmm. But to an outside observer, they don't know. Mm-hmm. So it helped me then go in and offer more explanation. Mm-hmm. So after that call, I would sit down and I would break that training into 5 or 6 little trainings and record them to build out my course.
Yeah. Yep.
So by running it live, I created the best course it could be. Mm-hmm. Now for my membership, I opted not to go with an SEO course because SEO literally can change every month.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So by making it a membership, you are always staying up to date with the latest updates to Google.
I love that. Well, and also that you thought through what is the best way for me to run this. Because with SEO, it's changing. It could be changing all the time. The best way for my participants to engage with this is give them the option where we can change things and be up to date. So I love that. That's so brilliant.
Thank you.
So I'm wondering, Tanya, what this kind of segues, because when we talk about the things that we love to teach on the podcast, then we talk a lot about entrepreneurship topics on this podcast. And obviously I am a big fan of what I call the micro action, like breaking things down into its smallest part so that you just don't get hung up on stuff. And I think specifically micro actions help me overcome gray area or vagueness that shows up in things that I want to do, because it helps me either understand, do I know enough to get started and move forward, or do I need to go get other information, right? So that's why I'm a big fan of like breaking things down into its like smallest component and then keep that momentum going. I was wondering if you have any micro actions for yourself that you feel like have been particularly significant or helpful or impactful.
Hey there, divas. Real quick thing before we get back to the rest of this episode. Do you love Studio Class? You can support it now by joining the Sybaritic Camerata on Patreon. It's just at patreon.com/mezzoihnen, MEZZOIHNEN. For $10 a month, you can join the listening circle where you get access to bonus episodes, you can make listener requests, and for $20 a month, you can become a Masterclass Scholar. Do you ever wish you could ask our Masterclass episode guests a question? Here's your chance. As a Masterclass Scholar, you're invited to the recording of the Masterclass episodes, and you get to ask your questions during an exclusive Q&A after the taping. So come on over, check it out, patreon.com/mezzoihnen. And now we're back to the episode.
I do. So there's a great book, and I cannot for the life of me remember who wrote it, but it's called The One Thing.
Ooh,
I want to say Darren Hardy, maybe, but don't quote me on that. But it's called The One Thing. Yeah. And the whole premise of this book is, what is the one thing that I can do today that is going to propel me forward to reach my goal?
Yeah.
Because 80% of the things that we do every day aren't really driving us towards our end vision. So one micro action that I take every single morning, I have a planner that has like a daily section, a page for every day. I'm a big fan of the Hobonichi Cousin. Yeah. And at the very top of my planner, I draw a little box and I write, how will I show up today?
Mm.
So how am I going to show up? Am I going to show up in my Instagram stories with a day in the life?
Yeah.
Am I going to show up and pitch myself or try to sell? Yeah. Or am I going to show up and just be honest about needing some self-care that day?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's so important to be able to relate to each other. And so often, social media is just like this little perfect world. And again, try to make it very real. And it's like, how will I show up today? Mm-hmm. Because that also helps me allow my content to better align with who I am.
Yeah.
And it helps give other people a vision to know who I am, because if they want to work with me, they need to have an idea of who I am and what my values are.
Exactly. I think that's such a great point. Tanya, I'm wondering if you could talk about maybe the internal side of like not sanitizing yourself while keeping it's the balance of I'm not going to sanitize myself necessarily for this, for putting forward my professional side of my life, but also the balance of these are the values, these are the things that I want people to know about. I want to be able to bring them into my professional sphere while also being a real human. What does that balance feel like for you?
I think being a real human comes first.
Yes.
First always, because it's more relatable.
Yeah.
My mastermind jokes that I'm the mom, and I'm the oldest person in there. I'm 46 and I've been doing this a long time, and I have different views on things. So like, I try to come across, hey, like here's your mom and I'm telling you, this is what you need to do. But I'm also a shoulder to cry on. And I think showing that humanness, that realness on social media makes you more relatable. It makes people want to work with you more.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so.
It makes you more relatable to them. It's like, hey, you know, I sat in the parking lot under a streetlight at my church, getting ready to go teach the class I teach one night, and just going on Instagram and going, you know what? I'm having a really crappy day and I'm about to have to do this and I don't want to do it, but this is what I have to do and I'm going to do it anyway. Yeah. And I'm just putting this out there because I want you to know it's okay to have days like this. Everybody does.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And that all of us are trying to figure out ways to, like you said, show up the way we want to show up. And sometimes that means overcoming, you know, the moments where we're like, I just don't want to do this, but I committed. And so I'm going to show, you know, those things. Is that when we're honest about those challenges, then we're also able to be honest about our commitments. So the way that we show discipline, all of those kinds of qualities in our lives too. So I love that you're pointing that out and allowing people to see that both like in your social media and just in your presence in real life. So Tanya, you mentioned pitching, and I was wondering if you would give us any of your, you know, thoughts about pitching. Is just so important across each facet of our lives, each facet of our portfolio careers. Can you talk about anything that you've learned as you've been pitching different types of offers and different types of work with different people?
Yes. Okay. So pitching is probably the hardest thing I have to do.
Really? No.
It is. Because there's something about talking about me that makes me feel incredibly uncomfortable. I want to talk about you. I want to help you. I'm not one to like brag about myself or my accomplishments. It just makes me feel uncomfortable, but I do it because it's a necessary part of business.
Right.
And the more I do it, the easier it gets.
Mm-hmm.
But pitching, you know, you have to be able to pitch something if you want your offer to sell. And we really pitch ourselves every day. When you are talking to that band director trying to get private lessons, you are pitching yourself and your services. Mm-hmm. You just don't know that what you're doing is pitching.
Right, right.
So, you know, pitching is selling yourself. Mm-hmm. And if you're in a job interview for a 9-to-5, you're pitching yourself. Mm-hmm. So I think the word pitching sounds really intimidating, but we really do it every single day. Yeah. And you just have to get over not wanting to talk about yourself.
Yes.
Or I had to get over not wanting to talk about myself.
Do you feel like there, when you were getting over that, quote unquote, I'm using some air quotes here, but getting over that, what were some of the things that you did to kind of help yourself realize I do need to talk about what I do, how I do it, and, you know, any of my credentials or any of that background experience so that people could trust me? What were some of the things that you were walking yourself through to get there?
So for me, it was 100% mindset. Mm-hmm. And I have done so much mindset work in the last 2 years. It's not even funny, but, there was a lot of mindset, because once again, that imposter syndrome starts to creep in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would have a pitch ready to go, whether it be pitching my service or pitching to someone else. And I would be there with my finger on the mouse, ready to click the button. And I'm like, oh no. Okay. But what is the worst thing that could happen? They say no.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I don't even know this person. Yeah. How do I care? And then I would just basically close my eyes and click the button real quick. And then it was done. And best of all, most of them said yes. But yeah, clicking that button was so hard.
Right? Well, and I think you're so right. We've talked about it in this episode, is that imposter syndrome is with us all. We all have to navigate through it and figure out, you know, what kind of imposter syndrome is showing up here. And so do you have any other thoughts about imposter syndrome and what you've done to remind yourself that you're here for a reason, baby? Like they, you know, that you have something, like a gift to share with people.
Okay. For me, a lot of it is really finding the root of mm-hmm. my imposter syndrome. I am one who hates journaling with a passion. I don't like to feel my feelings. Yeah. I'm very just type A business minded, but I have forced myself to sit down and just really dig deep and do some journaling mm-hmm. and find the root cause of my imposter syndrome. And once I found that, I was able to kind of go back and go, oh, well, that explains a lot. Mm-hmm. And I'll be the first to say it. I think a lot of us come out of music school a little bit damaged, or sometimes a whole lot damaged. Mm-hmm. I don't think people realize how hard musical school is.
Yeah.
But if you can get through music school, you can do anything in life.
You can do anything.
I mean, you can do anything in yes. life. But you know, it's like, you're always being told you're not good enough. Mm-hmm. You're always being told it has to be better. Mm-hmm. You're always told that you have to compete with everybody else. Mm-hmm. But here's the deal. Like, there's room for all of us out there.
Mm, amen. Say it again. Yes. Yes.
There is tons of room for all of us out there. I am not intimidated if somebody wants to do what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Because there's space for both of us. Yeah. We're going to have different personalities. We're going to attract different people. Yeah. And the person that wants to work with, you know, my colleague may not be the type of person who wants to work with me, and vice versa.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think as musicians, I think we always need to we know that there's room for thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of musicians in the world. Right. And so, but sometimes we forget that means that we have to show up too. Like we are part of that. We have to show up and be musicians for our community and be mentors and guides for our community. And we're all being called to do that in our own way. Doesn't mean there isn't room for you. It means you have to move into it and step up into it. So I love that. That's so good. So Tonya, as a musician, is there anything that is kind of sparking your creative mind at the moment? Really just like something that you're excited about working towards as a musician, as an artist.
Oh, honestly, it's inspiring my students. I mean, that's really it at this point in my life. It's inspiring my students, and I see it every day. I had this totally heart, like, I don't want to say heartbreaking, but it was like a tearing up moment. Yeah. I had a student, and she's like, so I've decided I'm going to start my own business on Etsy to make money to buy my new clarinet. Because you have all these businesses. So there's no reason that I can't make money selling handmade greeting cards on Etsy.
Yeah.
And oh, it made my heart so happy.
Yes.
That they're seeing that they have this opportunity to do great things, whether it be in music or whether it be just in life.
Yes. Yes. Oh, I love that. You know, that this question's a little unformed, but I really want to just ask this in an open way, which is, I think so many of us as musicians feel like money has to come to us in specific ways. And we have to get a grant and then we can have access to this thing that we want to bring into our life. And because you and I are, you know, just entrepreneurial fans, like we're just big fans of that, I was wondering if you could talk about shifting your mindset from money or revenue has to come to me only through teaching or only through performing or only through getting the grant, and then I can have the things that I want. And just what that means to kind of untangle that for yourself so that you can see multiple revenue sources and opening you up to more financial freedom.
Yes. Okay. So that's a really good question. Okay. So you're right, because in music school, we're taught you got to get that performance gig, or you have to build that studio, or you have to get that university teaching gig, mm-hmm. or, you know, we learn how to write grant proposals mm-hmm. or we get involved with nonprofits. But here's the deal. Sometimes you get that full-time university teaching gig, AKA me, and decide, I don't like this. This is not what I want to do with my life.
Real. That is very real.
So what then?
Yeah.
So I think, first of all, no one should keep their eggs all in one basket. Mm-hmm. I have so many friends who play in the Nashville Symphony.
Yeah.
And during COVID, the entire Nashville Symphony got furloughed. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the few full-time orchestras left.
Exactly.
And that's a full year of no income for them. And they were panicked. They were taking jobs in grocery stores. They were frantically trying to get private lessons, anything they could, so they don't lose their homes.
Yeah.
So that they can eat.
Right.
So we, you know, and these are people who've made it. I mean, we're talking people who are in their 60s that have been playing in a professional orchestra for years. It can just disappear all at once.
Right.
And we all need to learn from that lesson that we really need to diversify. Mm-hmm. That way, if one income stream goes away, we have others to back it up. Yeah. And they don't teach that in music school.
Yeah.
They're so one track minded. And I don't think they teach that in college, period. Yeah. Everybody's like, you know, oh, I'm going to be a band director. Well, what happens if they cut arts out of the schools?
Right.
Then you don't have a job.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm going to teach music lessons. Well, what happens if you get injured and you're disabled?
Mm-hmm.
You can't do it. Right. Maybe you lose a hand in an accident. I mean, God forbid.
God forbid.
But
yeah.
You're out of a job.
Mm-hmm.
So you really need to think about having a backup plan for your backup plan for your backup plan.
Yeah.
And by that diversification, you said it yourself, it allows you to have financial freedom. I have the financial freedom to literally cancel $300 worth of lessons today.
Right.
And not have to worry about it.
Right. Yeah.
And that's so important, because what happens if your family member gets sick and you have to take care of them?
Right.
If you have children and your kids have a week of snow days and you're stuck at home,
mm-hmm.
you know, you have to have a plan.
Yeah. Well, Antonia, I think you would agree with me 100% that it doesn't mean you're any less serious as a musician or an artist when you've thought through, oh, I have multiple revenue streams.
No, that just means you're a really smart musician and artist.
Yes.
I am so tired of hearing people have said it to me when I started building this out. They were like, oh, you're selling out. Oh, you just don't, you're not good enough to be a real musician. You're not going to do this. And I'm just kind of like, I don't get it. And right. Now that I'm on track to do well over six figures this year, yeah. And they're still living literally lesson to lesson, I was like, you know, maybe some of that might have been jealousy.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, but you have to get over what other people think, and you have to think about your personal situation in your family. When COVID hit and we were all very unsure, they shut all the schools down, everything went into lockdown. And like I said, I was one of the lucky ones. I actually picked up more students, yeah. But I didn't know that was going to happen. And my roommate, who I've lived with forever, yeah. We were talking and she's like, what are you going to do? I was like, I'll get a job at Kroger if I have to. Yeah. I will do what I have to do to take care of my family, yeah. And to not lose my house. And I am not above that.
Right. Absolutely. Well, and I think that's one of the things that I always like talking, especially to students about, is that idea of you are the person who concepts who you are as an artist for other people. Right. And so having multiple revenue streams doesn't change who you are as an artist and what you're bringing to the table. And I think there are so many paths to finding that in this life. And what you said about, well, I'm going to be financially stable and an artist. I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to have multiple revenue streams and be an artist is the kind of stuff that I really just want people to engage with a little bit more and just say like, oh, that's possible for me too. Right. I think sometimes we get a little too narrow in our thinking about what's possible for us. And I feel like that's a question that I'd love to ask you. Do you feel like that's been part of your path, is opening your own thinking to what's possible for you, Tanya, like what's possible for you and your life?
100%. And I say things like, you know, people, like you said, people are like, oh, I have to be an orchestral musician, or oh, I have to study with this person, or oh, I have. Well, the reason I say that is because that was me at one point in life. Mm-hmm. That was me. And over time, I started to realize there are other things that are equally as important. Yes, being creative is important. Yes, being an artist is important. But my professors romanticized that starving artist lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And I got news for you. There is nothing romantic about starving.
No way.
There is nothing romantic about not knowing if you're going to have a place to live next month.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
So, you know, it's the very reality of you have to be able to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
And if you can't do that completely as an artist yet, mm-hmm. There are other ways that will allow you to still create, yeah. And still be the musician you want to be while having that financial security. Mm-hmm. Having financial security allows you to say yes to the gigs you want to take, mm-hmm. And makes you not have to say yes to absolutely every single gig, no matter how low paying it is.
Right. Right. Or how soul crushing it is to be there.
Yes. Or in my instance, I, you know, being able to fire a student,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, not having to teach a student that doesn't practice all the time just because I'm worried about making rent.
Right. Well, and then that allows you to build more and more of the studio that you want to have. So you're able to say, I get to work with these students and we're a great fit for each other. And it doesn't mean that, you know, if I have a student that we're not the right fit for each other, I don't have to hang on so rigidly because I know I can make that space for a new student who is the right fit.
Absolutely. And it allows you to charge more down the road too.
Amen. Yes, that's right.
I am at full capacity right now, and I still struggle in the saying no department sometimes. And especially when it's someone I know, yeah, or like, yeah, siblings of students I taught. So this past year, I was like, that's it. I'm done. I'm going to outprice myself. Yes. Any new students coming in, I'm adding $10 to my half hour, $20 to my hourly rate. That's
yes.
it.
Yes.
So I was like, okay, I have this one time spot available and this is how much it is. And they were like, okay.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
And I was like, that's not what I wanted you to say, but hey, I'm making more money now.
Well, I think that's actually a thing that comes up a lot too when I'm working with clients who have studios and they know that they need to raise their prices. There's tons of resistance around it. Can you talk a little bit about when you've raised prices, how you've worked yourself through that process, any of that kind of information, just for all of us that are kind of like maybe in that spot right now and they know that they need to, their business they're subsidizing these students' lessons with their own financial capacity. And I just want to make sure that everybody kind of starts to think about getting out of that situation. So.
Yes. Okay. So think about it this way. What you're doing is running a business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say that again. What you're doing is running a business.
Yes.
Do you think Starbucks had any qualms about raising the prices of lattes? I used to joke and call it $4, but now it's like $7. Do you think McDonald's is going to think about raising the price of their burgers? Everything goes up and you have to as well. And if you don't, you're not going to be able to make a living mm-hmm. because the price of everything at the grocery store has gone up. But if you're making the same amount, you are now below the poverty line.
Yeah.
So my experience, I did a pretty big rate increase 2 years ago, and I'm actually planning on doing another rate increase in August.
Yeah.
Now, because I teach in the schools, I do all of my rate increases at August because that's when school starts.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I am telling students now,
mm-hmm.
lessons mm-hmm. are going up starting in August.
Mm-hmm.
I did the same thing the last rate increase. I announced it in May.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, lessons are going to stay the same throughout the summer, but they are increasing by $5 mm-hmm. per lesson starting in August.
Mm-hmm.
And parents were like, thank you so much for giving us time to know.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
Not a single student quit.
Wow.
But here's the deal. If you have 10 students mm-hmm. and you raise your rates, I don't know, say you're teaching for $25 for a half hour mm-hmm. and you want to raise your rates to 30
mm-hmm.
and you have 10 students, one of them quits.
Mm-hmm.
You're now teaching fewer students, but you're still making more money.
Yes. Yes. And I think that's usually an algorithm that I want people to run before they raise their rates is just think about, okay, how many students do you have? If they all come with you, that's how much more you're making. What's your wiggle room? So like how many students do you lose and still make more money than you are right now? That's just a really good number to keep in mind, right? And so I love that you brought that up as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll be honest, I have never lost a student in a rate increase.
Yeah, neither have I, honestly. So I think a lot of it, and that doesn't mean that it doesn't happen. And so if it happens, anyone who's listening, if it happens in your studio, that doesn't mean you did it wrong. Like, it just means it happens. And so it just maybe doesn't happen as much as we might feel inside. Like it's, oh, we're going to lose all of them, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And in the rare occasions where parents were like, oh, you're going up. And I'm like, yeah, you know, everything's gone up. The price of groceries have gone up. Therefore, I have to raise my rates mm-hmm. in order to be able to do that. I'm so sorry, but this is just the way it is. They're like, oh, well, yeah, I get that. Yeah. You know?
Totally.
I mean, I bought bacon at the grocery store the other day. It was $10.
Oh my gosh. Inflation, man.
Yeah. I'm the old mom, remember? Right. So I remember when it cost $5 to go to the movies.
Right, right. And so you're like, well, and that's it. It's like, that's something for us to remember is like, whatever you paid for lesson, that's not the case anymore. Whatever, you know,
absolutely.
You have to kind of just remember that you are in charge of your business. And you are the person who approves the rate of living increase. You are the person who decides this is what this costs now. And that's just necessary as part of your business.
And you don't have to charge the same price everyone else is charging.
Oh my God.
I am one of the highest charging teachers in my area. And I have a studio that's well above capacity at this moment. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Are there any takeaways that you have from that about the takeaways that I'm looking for here are kind of like, What did you think about being one of the highest rates kind of in your area? And did it mean anything to you when you kind of made your fees such?
Like I said, I don't look at what other people are charging. Mm-hmm. And when I did a rate increase, the most recent one I did, it was everything had gone up. And I had maintained my rates for probably 8 years.
Oh, that's a long time. Yeah,
it was. Yeah. I mean, it was well past due. Yeah. So I went ahead and I talked to some other teachers and I was like, I'm gonna raise my rates. And they're like, oh, no, I'm not going to do that. The economy is too bad. People have quit. I'm not going to do that. And I'm like, OK.
Yeah.
And I raised my rates. Mm-hmm. And now I make more money than they do. They still haven't raised their rates because they're afraid to. Mm-hmm. You can't let fear get in your way of a business. You have to keep your emotions out of it.
Yeah.
You have to make business decisions solely based on the data.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think we can always recognize, and one of the things that you're showing and as we have this conversation is you're aware of the feelings that are coming up for you. And you're saying, yep, I see you, fear. Thank you for showing up. And I'm just going to set you over there for a minute while I go make this business decision. So Tanya, I know that you know this about me because I just love curiosity. I think that curiosity is one of the things that fuels us. I think it's a superpower. I think it's one of the ways that we get over all of our weird feelings about networking and community building. So I'm wondering, what is something that you're deeply curious about these days?
Oh, okay. So I have something new that I'm very curious about. Yeah. And that is human design.
Ooh, yes.
My mastermind brought in someone to do a masterclass on human design.
Yeah.
And it blew my mind. So yeah. I literally have a one-on-one call with this person scheduled for 2 weeks from now to really go over it because human design is one of those things for me. It's kind of like horoscopes in the yeah. astrological signs.
Yeah.
It's like, I know I'm a Virgo. I know that everything about Virgos applies to me. I don't understand why or how. And the human design aspect of it is as I'm looking at the human design chart and she's explaining what these things mean, I'm like, uh-huh, that's right.
Yeah.
I don't know how it works, but it's accurate. So I'm really interested to learn more. So I did. I went ahead and scheduled a one-on-one call.
I love that. For anybody that might be new to it, can you give it like just a little bit of information about human design or why people might want to check it out?
Oh, I know very little about it. So I will say that it's a new curiosity for me, but what you do is to create your human design chart, you need your date of birth, mm-hmm. your hour of birth, mm-hmm. the minute of birth and the location.
Wow. Yeah.
And you plug that in and it spits out all this data and it explains why you do things the way you do it.
Wow. And for you, it's felt so like intuitive. It just knows. And you're like, how, right?
Yes. Yes. It was like, oh, well, and if this section is colored in, then that means that you when you're on, you are on and you are ready to go, 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 go. And if you're around somebody who's full of energy, you're going to draw off that energy and you're going to go with it. But there are some days where you don't have the energy and you need to just give your time to rest. And I'm like, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're
that's
like,
absolutely
that.
Correct.
No, I love that. Well, and I think that self-awareness and any of the tools that help us just uncover that, unlock that a little bit more are all worthwhile because it's just new prompts for us to just kind of be like, oh, right, that helps me understand how I'm operating in these different situations, if I want to have more mindfulness about my own actions and behaviors. And so I think that's really, really important. And just having multiple tools to get us there, I think is key. So thank you so much for sharing about that. That's very cool.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm really excited about learning more about it.
Yeah. Well, Tanya, I'm super thrilled. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Honestly, we could talk for much longer, but we're going to keep it here so that we don't go on for days and days. But I just really love just your openness about the business, about who you are as a teacher, how you want to show up in the world. I think all of those things are things that I deeply value. And so it means a lot to me to kind of learn from you and be in your presence. And so thank you so much. I'm sure that the listeners are going to get a lot out of this. Where can people find you on the interwebs if they want to stay either involved with what you're doing or maybe take one of the courses or anything like that?
Okay, so my website, TonyaLawson.com, T-O-N-Y-A, Lawson.com. And I'm also on YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok as @dr.TonyaLawson, @DrTonyaLawson.
Perfect. Awesome. Awesome. Thank you again so much. It's such a pleasure to talk with you and learn from you. And I, like I said, I know that the listeners are going to love this masterclass episode with you. So thank you, Tonya.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this masterclass episode on Studio Class. Hey, before you go, do you have a second? Will you take a screenshot of this episode and share it to Instagram with your takeaways? You can tag me there @MezzoEnan. That's MezzoEhnen. It makes a huge difference when you share this podcast with your friends. Or even strangers, really. So, with that in mind, I hope you'll rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.